What's up, boys?
Salutations.
Dude, we're back again for another episode of Everything is Okay. And it's the last one of the season, man. So we're going to have to make it a good one.
We potentially could have one more. Maybe.
Not if I don't get five more reviews on iTunes, we're not going to get jack. So.
Right. So I had joked with somebody that, or somebody had asked me one time about you all doing your cat calls at the beginning.
Meow.
And whether or not I loved it. And
I'm sure they were assuming that you do.
Well, of course.
What's not to love? I mean, come on.
I mean, because, you know, I leave them in every time. And quite frankly, I have the power to take them out if I hated them. So.
Yeah, it sounds like someone has a God complex, but please continue. Someone's real proud of their editing skills over here.
It's the only God complex I have. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. But anyway, I was like, I don't even remember how it got started, but I know that I have the same reaction every time, and I know that I don't think about my reaction at all. Like, it's just an honest reaction of just this crap-eating grin on my face
for
a couple seconds, and then, yeah, so whatever. How are you, fellas?
What a fade out there.
Yeah, that was that was a great opening story.
Brad always ends an anecdote on a high note. his anecdotes end like he's slowly backing away from the mic.
I realize that I don't have anything important to say. I don't really have that interesting of stories, and I know this. And so at the end, in my head, it's going, that wasn't interesting. Please get it off of you as quick as possible. Somebody else talk. Yeah, good gosh.
I love the inner dialogue, starting strong and immediately like, I should not have done this. How can I get out of this as quick as possible?
So it's been a crazy week. We had another mass shooting in Texas, which is heartbreaking. Trump got on and blamed it on mental health, which that may have been a factor potentially. But then NPR puts out a story where they're talking about how more often than not, mental health and like violence or mass killing are not associated. So it's actually the rare case that they are, which is interesting because I would assume like, I mean, if you have a guy that's going to go out and shoot up a church, like clearly something's wrong from a mental health perspective. But on the other side, like obviously if you have mental health issues, it doesn't mean, like if you're schizophrenia, it doesn't mean you're going to go kill, you know, 50 people in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, it's a tough place for the country, man. And I've been kind of just scouring the internet and looking at Twitter, and you know, the common denominator besides obviously guns and shootings, seems like it's male. You know, it's more often than not males that are perpetrating this and not females. And it makes me ask, as a father of a new son, like what are we doing? Like how much control or how much responsibility do we take as friends, fathers, etc. in a situation like that? And is there a way to course correct with this upcoming generation? Obviously funding and supporting mental health initiatives is extremely important. Probably making it more difficult to get guns is going to help with the process, I would hope. But I'm looking at us as Christians, as men, looking at our situation and our future and asking, like, what can we do?
Yeah. I was talking to a friend earlier this week about it, and I feel like we have this issue that when things like this happen, we vilify people who have things that might have contributed to a mass shooting, like mental health and whatever. And it definitely feels to me like the best way to make sure people don't get help for whatever it is, just feeling like you're being separated from society or mental health or whatever, not reaching out to other people and whatever, the best way to make sure people end up in those situations that lead to that is to vilify all the people who've ended up in those situations. And that's kind of what we do when it comes to mass shootings and that sort of thing.
Like, we need it's, to. It's so difficult not to vilify.
Right. Which is understandable. Like, what just happened, I mean, it's kind of the definition of a villain. Right. Somebody who's going to do something that's like a mass shooting.
What is, if you really start to pay attention, what you start to discover is it all depends on who that person is, right? So let's look at the last three tragedies in the United States. We had the Las Vegas shooting. White male, wealthy, seemingly had a lot going for him. And we hear, don't politicize, lone wolf, doesn't represent the community. And basically, it was brushed aside, that person. Next, we have a person who decided to drive a Home Depot truck down a sidewalk and take out people in New York City. That very day, our president tweets, we need to get rid of these animals. Let that sink in for a second. Then we have Sunday with another white male walking into a church with an assault rifle. And before he walks into a church, he decides to pepper the whole entire church with bullets, killing two outside, then walking in and essentially killing people just for making too much noise, including 5-year-old children and 70-year-old elderly people. So, and again, we heard, do not politicize this. Pay respects to the people who died. All this stuff, and they blamed it on mental health. So it's easy to get mad at the guy who drove a truck into 8 people because, one, he was brown, and two, he yelled Allah Akbar, right? It's easy to hate him. Everybody can get on board with that. But what are you going to hate? What are you going to hate on when a guy walks into a church? What are you going to hate on? So you got to hate on something. Let's blame mental health. If anything, after listening today, it was a failure of our gun control policy that we currently have, that he was able to purchase the amount of guns he was able to purchase based on the fact that he was in jail through the Air Force for giving brain damage to his infant son and beating up his, I believe, wife, but may have been girlfriend at the time.
No, it was a wife, I think.
It was his wife?
Yeah.
Okay. And he was in jail for a year. That's all he got and was allowed to buy guns. Now, that was basically because of somebody in the Air Force not filing the proper paperwork, so that when he lied on his background check information and said, no, I have not been charged with domestic violence or a felony, it did not come up that, yes, in fact, he had. So it just makes me sad. It makes me ask this question, and maybe you guys have the answer to this. What group of people has to die before people are going to take this serious? What group of people? Is it a group of highly successful CEOs? Or is it a daycare full of infant children? Is that enough? Because supposedly, you know, our track record is, if it's a high school, that's not going to make us really talk about it. And apparently an elementary school is not going to make us talk about it either. So what's the age, or what's the group of people that it's going to take for people to actually sit down and talk about what's going on?
Well, it depends on what you mean. Do you mean discussing gun control or background checks or what?
Well, because the problem what's right going now, to produce people to not say something, and I get the sentiment. So before somebody sends me an email or a text message or whatever saying, you don't know what you're talking about, I get the sentiment of thoughts and prayers, but what's going to get people off their ass from stopping and saying, I'm sending you thoughts and what's going to keep us from thinking and praying and actually doing something about it?
Right.
I'm hoping we can do all of the above myself.
No, and that's what I mean. Right, I get that. Like, I get the sentiment of think thoughts and prayers, but at some point, like...
Well, the problem right now is that the assumption is from a lot of people who would need to change their opinion, lots of them think, well, if more people had guns, they could have stopped that. So, when more guns is your solution... Which isn't helped out by the fact that there was somebody who shot at the guy.
Right. And then he's, you know, he's being basically crowned a town hero. And frankly, in my opinion, he is. But you're right. Like, that doesn't help, does it?
Well,
it didn't help at all.
See, that's the difficult thing, though. Yeah. Like, I saw on a couple headlines that said this hero saved lives. But he shot at the guy when he was leaving the church. So, I mean, there's not really a reason to think he was going to shoot at more people. Like, it seems like he was done and was leaving.
Well,
when this person shot him, you know, so, like, it's
a tough call. I get what you're saying.
I mean, he was leaving the church, though. So, it makes it rough, because I don't know that he was going to shoot more people. We don't know. The guy's dead, so, you know, we won't ever know. But we do know he was leaving the church when it happened. So it's on the tail end of the shooting, this thing happens that justifies a lot of people having guns in people's minds.
And that's changed the conversation already. It's should there be no guns or should everyone have guns? That's the conversation I literally was hearing all day today. And I mean, that's now the conversation.
But the thought of everybody having guns, like, or, oh, the solution is we need to have more guns. Like, when you look at just the overall firearms in the United States compared to other countries, I don't have the stats off the top of my head, but we're like either number one or number two.
It's for sure number one.
Yeah, of like, it's something, some outrageous number of how many people have guns. And it's like, we have enough guns. Like, no one's saying that.
There's 270 million, I just heard this today, there's 270 million guns in the United States, and roughly a third of our population has guns. So roughly about 100 million people has 270 million guns.
So segueing from the gun conversation that it's been front of mind, I think, for probably all three of us, and it's hard not to talk about it or think about it when you turn on the radio or look on the news or you go to work. And yeah, like, we live in two states that are pretty proud of their guns. And I also own guns. And I feel like it must have been like, I don't know if it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. At some point in the narrative in the United States, I'm sure the NRA were behind this, but they basically equated like gun control with losing your guns. And like, that is such a ridiculous train of thought or logic. Like, it's broken. Like, having less guns or having gun control or deciding which guns are acceptable and which ones are not, or making it more difficult to purchase or keep guns or have to go through some sort of training, does not mean that we're turning into some police state where everyone loses their guns. Like, it frustrates me, and I think it ties directly into our topic today, which is hypermasculinity, which is the venom that I think runs in the blood of the male population in the United States. It starts very, very early, of where we paint a picture of what it means to be a man, what it means to be in charge, what it means to be strong or cowboyish. And one of those components is, oh, well, I'm going to have my guns. Have you seen my guns? Like, let me show you my guns. Or not backing down from a conflict and wanting to win a fight. Or, I don't know, be Clint Eastwood, basically. And I think today we want to dive into a little bit of that and a couple other topics.
Yeah, so this topic was, I guess, my idea, and it's been something that has been brewing in my head for quite a long time. And it stemmed from not only the election and the rhetoric coming out of the election, the things you heard, the contradictions you heard during the election, based on the fact that you can get away with saying you want to sexually assault somebody by just calling it locker room talk. You can't, however, if you delete emails, you are a villain and whatever else. And so it's something that's been on my mind since then, but nowadays it seems to come up more and more. Every time guns come up, David, it's exactly as you discuss. So one of the things that I thought would be helpful is for us to start this conversation with some definitions. I thought we could start there and we can see where this goes from here. So I'm going to start with the definition of masculine. And this comes from dictionary.com.
Sorry.
In case somebody thinks I'm not just getting it off.
I feel like we're in high school right now and you're citing like google.com and dictionary.com as your peer-reviewed citations for your term paper.
Bibliography,
you got to see on. Perfect.
Hey, I did terrible in literature, but I did great in comp class. Anyway, so definition of masculine is having qualities or appearance traditionally associated with men, especially strength and aggressiveness. So that's the definition of masculine. The definition of feminine, which I think is also important, is having qualities or appearance traditionally associated with women, especially delicacy and prettiness. And because we've kind of mentioned it, so this does come off of Wikipedia, but hypermasculinity is a psychological term for the exaggeration of male stereotypical behavior, such as an emphasis on physical strength, aggression, and sexuality. So I thought we could start there. You know, where are you guys at with that stuff?
Yeah, I don't think we're trying to paint a picture of that like gender binary is necessarily evil or problematic, because I don't think it is at all. What I do see is a pattern of behavior in our culture, in our movies, in our politics, where the concept of man, the concept of strength, the concept of winning, of sexual dominance, of being basically on top, is consistently lifted high and celebrated. And the concepts of classic femininity are depreciated, right? Like, are either put to the back burner or ignored or not celebrated, when frankly I think the entire combination of both male characteristics and female characteristics together, I think, paint a more well-rounded individual. And we're going to dive a little bit into emotional intelligence, but one of the factors for the feminine that's extremely practical and important is their understanding and concept of emotion, of the larger range of emotion, of not just being cornered like majority of men are, with having access to anger and to humor, and really that being the extent of it, or being stoic, or basically acting like they're anti-emotion and that being celebrated. I think that harms men. I think it harms our teenagers, our children, and trying to find a better balance between the two, almost blending the two genders potentially with our youth, with our children, etc., are going to make more well-rounded humans. And that's what I'm hoping for in the future. I don't have a daughter yet, but when I do, I hope she's freaking dominates in math. And I don't know, is the kicker on the football team like we have in Hattiesburg right now?
That's right.
We have a female kicker.
Dude, we got a girl here in Oklahoma who is a starting linebacker and is a stud.
Nice.
In high school. Yeah, she is I heard about her on the news, and like she's pretty amazing.
That is awesome. What do you think, James?
So, you said that, you know, you're not against the binary and all of that. I kind of am. I get that there's no harm in the starting point of, you know, women starting on one side and being known for their sensitivity and their gentleness and their kindness, and then men on the other side starting from places of strength and boldness and all of that. But I feel like to have a healthier society, we need to move towards a middle line where men are not lesser if they aren't linebackers.
Right.
You know, like if a man is someone who, like somebody who was foundational in my life, our children's minister growing up, Richard, I would not describe him as big masculine things, you know, like any of that. But I feel like he is one of the greatest men I have known as someone who was sensitive and gentle and kind and a peacemaker and all of these things that are generally generalized as feminine. I feel like
right.
He's more of a man to me than a lot of people who are, you know, like the quote manly men. And are really tough and never show weakness and never cry and never do any of these things. And I feel like it's when we regulate each gender to a certain lane, we minimize the impact that each gender can have. And we minimize the opportunities, the health of our sons and daughters when doing that. I feel like we should praise women for being strong and bold and confident, and we should praise men for being peacemakers, for being sensitive and being gentle. I definitely feel like we need to do away with some of those things, just like blue and pink. Those are not, why do we give genders to those? That's so ridiculous,
right?
Like it's we try to like relegate so many things that have no reason to be gender specific to specific genders. And that's nothing but a limitation that's unnecessary.
Yeah. We can blame our marketing,
right,
and materialism for that. I'm thinking, you know, it's funny. Think for a second, like imagine if the three of us could be transported back to communicate with like the 14 and 15 year old versions of ourselves. And how much gender normalizing or gender education was occurring, like in youth group when we were hanging out, when in high school, playing sports, etc. Like the picture of what we were supposed to be, like not being girly, not being a wuss, not being the F word that I'm not going to say. Think about how much policing happened with the youth, and if you had said what you just said to that group, could you imagine the looks on our faces?
I mean, we definitely come from the generation of people who have completely bought into the idea of the book Wild at Heart, and all of those sorts of things. Like, this is what a man is, you know. Kind of the idea of growing up with Home Improvement being one of our main shows, you know, like this is,
I'm watching that right now.
As silly as that seems, like that absolutely instilled this is what a man is. This is how you be a man.
Right.
And anything that was opposing to that, they kind of mocked and whatever, and didn't want anything to do with it. If it could look wimpy. And it's just really, really interesting to me that that's the way it works, especially since that's modeled so often in the church as, you know, you have a men's group who needs to go out and camp and fish and hunt and, you know, whatever, you know, manly things. You just got to go out and be men. And then the women's group that, you know, they'll have their quilting group if it's an older church, or, you know, cooking classes or whatever, or a women's Bible study, which is the only chance anyone in the church really gets to learn about any Bible characters that are female. Because I don't ever remember, as someone who's been in church an absurd amount of times, I don't remember doing studies on women. I just don't, because that was a woman's study.
I don't really remember either.
They might mention a woman, but we weren't gonna study anything about it. And if we were going to study how to be a man, it was, you know, talking about how David was you know, this big hardcore soldier who killed a giant, but not talk about how he had a relationship that would is more mirrors girlfriends now than the way guy friends are supposed to be, with his friendship with Jonathan, and he played the harp. I mean, that's not really the manliest thing you can do, right?
Dude, all of the harpists that listen to this podcast right now just like turned their podcast.
They were so mad.
They're just like, get this out of here.
They just
get it out of here.
Stormed over the corner and did their anger riff on the old harp, which still sounds angelic.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, like, we have that for David, or, you know, Jesus was the carpenter, so he was probably actually pretty strong and all that. But we ignore the fact that Jesus wept with people. He didn't cry. He wept. Jesus cooked meals for people. Jesus was subservient. Jesus washed feet.
Jesus did so many things
that were the feminine things. And then tells people that they need to try to be more loving, joyful, peaceful, patient, want forbearance, kindness, and gentleness, and faithfulness, and self-control, and all these things that are, like, that's, what are you talking about? That's not manly
Isn't
stuff.
Isn't it interesting how the fruits of the spirit are, like, anti-masculine?
Right, it's all, like, calm down.
In our culture.
Actually learn how to get along, not to defeat the other. Because that's the interesting thing, is the masculine is to defeat. And the feminine is to, like, learn how to coexist and be peaceful
together. To be a good listener.
Right.
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 Yeah.
So with what we were just talking about, you know, the wild at heart things at church, which we actually just had one of those at our church. I didn't end up going. Ironically, they were going to shoot guns, and they had a women's study too. And Megan didn't go to that either. I mean, it was called Sisters, which I'm not hating on, but with that, I start to wonder, like, I have to admit, you know, when you start to read the Old Testament, there's a lot of masculine type themes in there, a lot of defeat, a lot of war, a lot of so-and-so was great because he killed so-and-so, and all this stuff. But it almost feels like, do you think the Bible was overly masculine because of the time period that it was written, and that was just the culture? Do you think that is a actual Christian theme, or do you think that nowadays people kind of, it's almost as if they gloss over the parts you guys were just talking about, the more feminine type parts of loving and washing feet and laying yourself down for other people and things of that nature? Like, do you think, what do you think is attributing to that?
Once we have our status quo, we want to keep up with it. Like, that's the way we work, you know? Change is hard.
I guess I'm asking, when do you think the status quo got,
I mean, it's
started?
Been like that for forever. I mean, you look at, in the Old Testament, kind of how a lot of the things worked, and the feminine aspects of characters were overlooked, and they highlighted the masculine because they wanted their heroes to seem really tough. But, I mean, even various prophets. Jeremiah was really emotional the whole time as a prophet. David wept all the time, harp player, as we said, like so many of those things. And then you also have Deborah. I mean, Deborah was a warrior. Deborah was one of the judges that was a judge and prophet over Israel for 40 years or so. Like, there's a lot of things that don't line up well with this binary of this is the two separate groups that you have to fit completely in one or the other. And even this interesting shift as you read the Old Testament of the seed of the man being so important and all of that, when it in Genesis, the initial conversation about like the descendants of Eve is where Jesus was supposed to come from, you know. So it's interesting that then, as soon as they had somebody to latch on to with Abraham, they completely ignored the fact that Eve was the one that got the promise before Abraham, like that kind of thing. That once a certain group was in charge, you want to make sure you stay in charge. And so, you know, the masculine was definitely praised over the feminine. But, I mean, if you really read into it, when Jesus was around, you know, all the time he was telling people they couldn't hack it and they should go away. He did that often. And yet, there's plenty of occasions where it lists out all the ladies that were there, as well as the disciples. And the thing is, it was mostly ladies that made Jesus' entire ministry possible. They bankrolled the whole thing. Like, we like to ignore that, but the providers in that whole situation were female.
But the providers have been, like, the providers have been secondary citizens in culture for so long. Like, and you think right. about like the 12 disciples, why weren't half of them women? Because even in that culture, as like
the ones that, those, that those we have listed
for being, say what?
The ones that we have listed. Once again, like I've said before on the podcast, I think Jesus would have not said he had 12 disciples. I think he would have said a higher number and included women.
Y'all, if you, personally, if you stay with us to season 2, we're actually going to get Jesus on the podcast and he's going to have a rebuttal for James.
Season 3.
Right there.
Dave doesn't even know what number we're on.
It's going to be great.
But, I mean, you also have, like, this idea of the leader in situations, their name going first. Like, you have in the stories of Paul, when he kind of took over in ministry, was the whole situation with Bar-Jesus and all of that. And up to that point, Paul and Barnabas was first. It was Barnabas and Paul, and then Paul stepped up and, you know, called somebody out, and from that point on, it was Saul and Barnabas. And so you have that transition of this is now the person that's in charge. Well, in one of the couples that Paul references quite often, and actually one of the ladies that there's the potential that she may have actually been the one that wrote Hebrews, Priscilla, when it mentions Priscilla and Aquila, I mean, it's I think they're mentioned 6 times, and it's like an even split of whose name comes first. So there's even these relationships where women had prominent positions in the early church. And while Jesus was around, he definitely had women that he placed in the highest regard and called to all the same things that he called the men to. So the fact that he called all these women and had conversations with women, and the walls that he broke down in that, and then how often he called people to do, frankly, for men to take on more of the feminine characteristics, the characteristics that we've deemed as feminine. And so I guess the good question is, if you're somebody who considers yourself Christian, do you get to relegate some of those characteristics to feminine if Jesus called us all to embody them? Is that something that we're allowed to do?
Well, we're definitely challenged to pick up more characteristics and add them to the aspects that we hope people see in ourselves, that's for sure. And for many men, we're behind the times in comparison to women when it comes to channeling love, patience, thoughtfulness, anything servant-wise. Like, that's just, it hasn't been celebrated in our socialization from being very young into our teenage years, into our adult years. And so, like, it's almost like the challenge is on us to catch up with the rest of the population that may have been practicing those fruits of the Spirit for their entire life and been celebrated in those acts.
Which is funny that we tend to say that girls mature and develop so much faster than boys. Maybe this is why. Maybe the fact that girls are allowed weakness. Girls are allowed to pursue emotional health and not hide it all. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe if we actually told our sons it was okay to cry and okay to feel.
Right.
Maybe they would get further faster.
And it's funny, too. We soak in that the parenting styles that we see. Right, or the coaching styles that we've seen. And what shocks you is if you do become a dad, when you catch yourself doing those things that the men around you were doing to you when you were super young and realizing, oh wait, I don't really want to do it that way anymore. And then you gotta catch it. You're like, no, I'm trying to form this perfect butterfly that's like the combination of male and female. And so he's going to eventually rule the world with his servant-like stewardship. And, you know, I don't know. I'm still workshopping that, but...
You have a little while.
Yeah, I do have some years.
I mean, so you started the clock, but you have a little while.
So as we kind of talking about the... You know, we've talked about the different characteristics. You know, men and women tend to possess and have possessed, you know, throughout history. And obviously one of the big things that I think we've all three experienced is how that translates into leadership roles when it comes into our churches. I know growing up we never experienced any type of female leadership really of any kind, or at least I don't remember any. I know at the church I'm at now, we have some campus pastors that are female at this point, but you know, kind of what is your thoughts on the different roles within the church and how this all may play into that?
I mean, to me, I feel like if I wanted to learn how to do programming really well, I would probably bring somebody in to teach me how that knew a lot about programming and who had been doing programming. And it seems like if Jesus called us to be more gentle and be more sensitive and be peacemakers, and this is something that we've relegated to women in society, maybe we should put more women in leadership positions, since they're the ones who we've decided should be doing it for a while, and that's what Jesus has called us to do. Maybe we should bring some of the experts in. And if you really want to do these things that Jesus told us to do, maybe we need more women to help us learn how to do that.
It's like a lot of the conversations that you heard after Barack Obama was elected president, is that like, wow, our black children can now look and see that like, the presidency is potentially attainable, when before only like white boys and not white girls could look up and say like, hey, I could be president someday. Like there is worth in showing different identities in our leadership. And it definitely goes for our women. Like, do we want our little girls going to church on Sundays and like, yeah, maybe at Sunday school, they may get a female teacher, but like rarely, if ever, hearing a female actually bring the word or preach. Mm-hmm. No, like we want our little girls to know that like the sky's the limit and you have a lot of qualities that we want to see in our leaders. And we're showing you that through this person or that person. Like, show me an action, you know? Like, show me an action.
And it definitely goes to further that divide of, you know, the characteristics that are important when we only allow men in leadership as well. You know, whatever we've valued in men is obviously most valuable if men are the ones who are supposed to be in charge.
Right.
Which, I mean, goes in society. Like, you can definitely see that in society in the fact that if I say someone became a superhero, like something happened to you and you became a superhero, what does that mean? That means you now can do things that are more masculine. Like, that's what it is, right? That's what a hero is. Someone who's now stronger, tougher, can fight better, all these things that we've relegated to men, right? And then we also have, like, worldwide, whatever deities we have, yes, there are female deities, but there's very few female deities in charge. You know, like, if there is one, it's normally in a, like, a multi god system, and there's one that's in charge that's still a male. And so we've literally deified the masculine. And so if right. you want to be a hero, you want to be godly, you want to be any of these things, you have to be more masculine, which is an interesting thing that Jesus kind of broke down, and the fact that he was like, you know what we need to do? Stop doing all of that, because you doing that just leads to you murdering each other and leads to slavery, leads to sexual assault, leads to all these things that are horrific. All these things in society, like we were talking about, mass shootings and stuff. All these things that we feel like we need to stop are things that we also praise, because it's for the
right.
in large part it's these masculine qualities that we demand that people embody.
I saw this really interesting speech on Facebook by Reese yeah. Witherspoon, and she was talking about, if I see another movie where when a problem arises or something or some trouble happens and the female lead turns to the male and says, what do we do? I'm going to shoot myself, you know? And it's like, it's that sort of example, right? Like, the female defers to the male. Oh, there's yeah. the world's ending. You know, like, you look to Mark Wahlberg, right? it's like, Marky Mark, save us now.
Which, it's crazy too, because no matter what the situation is, like, if it's, you know, a medical problem and there's a female doctor and some dude just shows up who knows somebody who got sick, she's like, oh no, what do we do? No, you're a doctor. Like, this person is, like, medically trained for this. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we definitely need more female doctors too. Ladies, if you're listening, what
science up? And math, do it.
I found something kind of interesting. So with some of the stuff that's going on, you know, with Hollywood right now, with Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey and all this stuff that's coming on. You know, I started watching right before all of that broke. I started watching this show on Amazon called The Last Tycoon. And it's got Kelsey Grammer and Matt Bomar from White Collar. And it's a really good show. I kind of get into some cinematography and things like that. And it's set in the 1930s in Hollywood. And Kelsey Grammer's a studio exec. And Matt Bomar's like his number two. And the thing that I noticed about it, first episode, Kelsey Grammer, which is the studio exec, is literally having almost every actress that wants to be in a movie sleep with him. One wow. of the scenes in the show is him getting, for lack of a better term, serviced by an actress. So I don't know how this is, like, shocking to people in Hollywood. They were literally making a show about it. Mm-hmm. So it makes me scratch my head sometimes, because when you literally watch them making art about the way it was back then and then being shocked that it's still that way, it seems counterintuitive to me.
Well, I think we were hoping that, like, the men of today had gotten with the program and had realized, like, hey, things may have happened in the 30s, 40s, 50s where we clearly objectified women in everything that we did, but maybe that's not acceptable. But then, to your point, when we turn on Game of Thrones, when we turn on any commercial that's trying to sell anything, like, clearly the feminine body and, like, sex is still primarily used. Like, women are primarily used as sex objects in order to get us to spend money. And it's like, maybe we haven't changed that much as a society, you know? Like, maybe we haven't learned from the sins of our fathers. All of our dads are fine.
Well, it's interesting that we've learned to somehow justify it. Like, I don't know how many times I've been told, you guys should really watch Game of Thrones. Yes, there's a lot of nudity and some pretty crazy things that happen, but it's a really good show. You should watch it. And, you know, me and Megan just made a pact a long time ago that we just didn't want to watch stuff that was kind of awkward with, you know, a lot of nudity in it and whatever else. And so we just don't watch it. And plus, we don't have HBO and, you know, whatever. But I just think it's interesting. You know, we justify, like, people justify it now. And we just say, like, yeah, there's a lot of nudity, which most likely means there's a lot of female nudity. It's just we justify it. Like, we people, you know, we just find ways of saying, like, well, it's just art, or it's this or that. But really, I mean, you know, it's what we're talking about. I mean, we're objectifying things.
Yeah.
So I've got nothing against Game of Thrones per se. I've never seen it, whatever, but it's just what people tell me.
There was an episode of Key and Peele where they were saying that they were asked about one of the movies. I can't remember which one it was, but it was like from like the Civil War times. And it was an episode or a show in the South. It was taking place in the South. And they were asked, how do you feel about all the uses of the N-word in this movie? And they said, how do we feel about the use of the N-word in a movie about the South in the 1800s? We'd call it accurate. that's what we would call it. I mean, you know, so it is difficult when you have movies from that time period, because this stuff was horrific. Like, I mean, that was the value of a woman, you know, which is why divorce was such a terrible thing, because you divorce a woman, that's basically what you're making her, is she's gonna have to sell herself to do anything, you know. So that's the weird balance in that, of like, if they want to make accurate art from that time period.
Well, so I guess my question is, the Bible would be considered based on that time
period.
And
it also talks about lusting after people whose genitals are like those of donkeys and emissions are like horses.
Right. But it also has quite a lot of what we're talking about in it. So you can argue that we're just following the biblical example. And I realize there's a difference with the New Testament. Jesus debunked that.
I think it's safe to say that there was, you know, flashes of a difference in the Old Testament as well.
Right, right. But, you know, is it people not really, are they, is it, you know, that classic phrase, are people picking and choosing?
No, I mean, the idea of the Bible is the story of the people of God, right? Like God's interaction with man. And The idea is they were not doing very well. And they were not doing very well. And they were not doing very well. And then they were shown how to do it better. And so we can't look at when they were not doing it very well, which is what a lot of the stories are, is pointing out, like, look, they tried this and it was a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm. And it makes it easier for flawed humans like the three of us to connect with the Bible, because it involves flawed humans trying to connect with God, which at the end of the day is, I think, what we're trying to do.
Well, and in that sense, it makes sense to me. But when you put it, you know, I've made it no secret that I've been trying to go on this journey of discovery when it comes to the Bible and faith and religion and whatever else, but when you put the Bible that way, it makes sense to me and is helpful. But when you put the Bible in a textbook. This is how you this is your rule book. I'm sorry, it doesn't make sense.
Right. I mean, if the Old Testament was working, there was no reason for Jesus to come.
Touché.
So to wrap this episode up, my thoughts go to our listeners, like throwing it to our listeners. We talk about some uncomfortable topics, and one of those is like, how do we ride a ship that is clearly valuing men over women, even in 2017? How do we show an example to our children, to those that we're mentoring, of what it looks like to be a more well-rounded human that values both aspects of the male and female gender, and also recognizes as Christians that Jesus absolutely lifted up aspects that we align with femininity. I can't say that word, apparently. It's kind of a hard one for me to say. There's a lot of words that are tough, but that's a tough one. But like, how do we align that? You know, what are we supposed to do as examples for those around us?
Yeah, I think something that's constantly rattling in my head with almost every episode we do is, you know, if there's a problem, we're really good at presenting the problem. But I always try to think about, like, what are some things we can actually do about it? What are some tangibles, like, and I know I just kind of went, it sounds like I went really churchy there. Like, what are the tangible steps we can take? But, like, I always try to put, like, some type of positive step on it, whether it's just me thinking about it, us recording, you know, later on, or, you know, whatever that may be. And I think something like this topic, something like race, something like whatever, I think it takes it for me, it's all about the little step. What is a small step I can take? Because if I look at a topic like patriarchy and I look at a topic like race, it can be daunting. It can seem overwhelming. It can seem like that there's really nothing I can, nothing, there's really no difference I can really make. But I think we're called to just take a step and just keep trying to move into a upward direction towards Jesus, if you believe in Jesus. So I guess with this topic, I think it starts how we treat, you know, our wives, our mothers, our daughters, if we have them, sisters, people that we're around, coworkers. For me, I seem to be in I get in a lot of groups that are mostly women. So how you treat them. So I guess for me, it's just about what's the tangible next step. And I guess it's just your everyday life, you know, what positive influence can you be on people? So
I think we just need to be gender queer or gender benders and fight the man and support our women leaders. Advocate for just the dismantling of hypermasculinity and everything around us.
Yeah, I guess when looking who important people have been in my life and in talking to other people, like who they've said were important and who was formative and what has pushed them towards health in life, fairly often it's women in their life have been the most consistent and have been there for people. And so I guess I would say, like, we should, like, let that mean something and value that the feminine has been very important in each of our lives, and we don't need to minimize that to try to be men, be manly and all of that. It's very important that we honor peacemaking, we honor gentleness, and we honor all of that. Because if we were more peaceful and gentle, we'd have a lot less wars. And I think that would make everybody a lot happier.
Heck yeah. We'd have a lot less shootings. So there you go.
So we've come to that part of the episode where we thank you for listening. We thank you for giving us an hour to an hour and 15 minutes of your time to allow us to think out topics, possibly lament, and try to discuss things that we're not experts on, that we don't have answers on, but that we're trying to take positive steps. With that, thank you, and I do mean thank you. It is an honor for each and every one of you to listen. But with that, I'm gonna ask for something. I'm gonna ask that for each of you who has listened to more than one of these episodes, to please share this podcast with one of your friends,
and send us a handwritten letter explaining why we should continue to do this. You can mail it to Brad. He just send it to some address in Oklahoma City. He'll get it. It's everybody knows who Brad is.
So Brad would like a lock of your hair.
Right. But anyway, I mean, in all reality, the way iTunes works is the more people that give us reviews, the more people that give us ratings, the more people who are searching for a podcast with a religious tone will come across us. The less reviews you have, the less ratings you have, the less visible you are. So the reason we continually ask you to rate us and review us is so that we can be more visible to more people.
Nailed it, Brad. Nailed it. Guys, just review us on iTunes, man. Yeah. It helps people find us. Love you.
And this episode will conclude season 3, but we're not going to be going away completely. We're going to be putting out the full copies of some interviews and doing some smaller episodes to just have some, continue to have some content until we come back. When, Brad? Approximately.
I don't know. I'm going to... Mid-January. I'll say mid-January. Possibly around my birthday. Which I won't say when that is.
We'll come back for Brad's birthday. Everybody, be sure to...
25th. 18th.
Basically, everybody just watch for a new episode to come out. As soon as we come back with a full episode, you'll know it's around Brad's birthday. And we'll provide his address for everybody to send in a pair of dirty underwear.
The 19th.
We're just going to let David guess every day in January.
The 22nd.
Yes! Nailed it. Now you can cut out all of his guesses and just put the right one. Make it sound impressive. Make him sound like he actually cares about you as a friend.
Right. No, please keep it all, actually. I think it's funnier me trying to figure it out. So
I guess, you know, with that, we'll go ahead and end. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
I'm James Eisenhower.
We'll see you next season. Everything's okay, people.
Nailed it.
Scientist, and I swam across the synaptic gap for you. And now I sit here. I must retreat.